Good afternoon and welcome back to our Savior's Radio Show online. I'm Pastor Eric Jelinek. It's great to have you with us here once again. And I'm joined, as usual, with Pastor Jennifer. Good afternoon.
Hello.
So tonight, or today, we are picking up where we left off last week. We are starting in 2 Samuel in the first chapter, and we are going to be looking at the life of David, at least a part of the life of David. And so, as of last week, Saul had been killed. And so had his sons, especially David's best friend, Jonathan. They had all been killed in a big battle. And now, as we start out in 2 Samuel, David finds out about what had happened. So he kicks off by having a guy come and tell him that there was this amazing battle that had taken place. And in this battle, Saul and his son Jonathan were killed. And David asked, well, how do you know this? And he said, well, I was up there and I saw what was happening. And I also saw that Saul turned to me and called me over. And I asked him what was going on and who are you? And I said, I'm a Amalekite. And he said, then kill me because I'm dying and I'm in terrible pain. And so I killed Saul. I'm the one who killed this man. And David, when he heard this, was extremely upset that Saul had been killed, because here was one of those who had been anointed by God. And even though Saul and David didn't get along, nobody was supposed to kill Saul. And so David's response to this man telling what had happened was he had this man killed. And so he died as well. And then David burst into a song that is a song that is a memory of Saul and basically Saul's entire life.
So in chapter 2, David has been anointed to be the future king of Israel for many, many years already. And in chapter 2 is when that actually comes to fruition. At this time, what we think of as the kingdom of Israel was actually two big parts: the kingdom of Judah, which was the southern territory, and the kingdom of Israel, which was the northern territory. And David was from the southern territory, and Saul had been from the north. And so very quickly, David is anointed to be king of Judah over the southern territory. And eventually he'd become king of the whole of Israel and Judah, but not for quite a while, because there's still people within Saul's family, within his tribe, who are trying to fight so that they can rule Israel themselves. And it takes quite a while to kind of calm them down and to conquer them. And so for a number of years, there's this civil war, basically. All of these people who came from the 12 tribes of Jacob, of Israel, have settled here, and they could be and should be one nation, but there are so many things that they fight about that they are divided into these two parts. And so David was king over Judah for, I think it was 7 years and 6 months, and he ruled in the city of Hebron. Then through a series of battles and some deception and deceit and
stuff that would
betrayal.
Make really good movies.
Oh, yeah. There are a number of battles that happen, and there's a man named Abner that has been on Saul's side the whole time. And David and Abner have come up against one another in battle many, many times as enemies, but they have kind of a healthy respect for one another. And so the time comes that Abner decides that really David should be king over this whole land, and so he tries to defect. But while he's trying to defect, Joab, who is kind of like a general for David, kills Abner because he knows that Abner has been David's enemy, and he also has killed, I'm trying to think who it is, within Joab's family. sorry, I can't find it very quickly, but Joab had it out for Abner, and so he kills Abner, and David quickly finds out, and so he makes Joab repent for what he's done, because Abner was a good man, and he was trying to defect, and really he was very faithful to King Saul.
It had been Joab's brother, Ashiel.
Okay, thank you. And so it's just interesting to see what kind of man, what kind of king David was. You'd think that someone who had been who had tried to kill him many times would not be his friend and would not be someone he would grieve over. But David did grieve over the loss of Saul, because Saul had been the Lord's anointed and had been his king. And he was the father of Jonathan, who was David's good friend. And so David really was trying to keep the peace and was trying to work with these people, but they all often made it hard. Chapter 5 in 2 Samuel, finally David's armies have subdued the Israeli armies, and so David is anointed as the king of Israel as well as the king of Judah. And with that one act, those two divided kingdoms are now united into one, that Israel and Judah are now a united tribe, as they had been under, you know, since they were from one family. But now, after all of this battle, after conquering the promised land and all the little battles that followed, finally they are brought back together as one kingdom again.
And what is the first thing that you do when you are united as one kingdom? Go fight the Philistines.
Well, first, they made Jerusalem the capital. Hebron had been the capital, but Jerusalem was made the capital, which, of course, is, you know, the holy city that we know of now. And so that was a wise choice, because it was a compromise between the northern kingdom and the southern kingdom. And so Jerusalem would be their new capital.
So after that, they had started again once another battle with the Philistines, and this was a common thing. It was also during this time that they brought the Ark to Jerusalem. And you can read that entire story in 2 Samuel 6. But David then brought the Ark back to Jerusalem. And there's even a part in there where one of the men who was carrying the Ark had tripped a little bit. Uzzah was his name. And in the process, he touched the Ark. And because of that, God was upset, because this was such a holy thing. And God struck him down dead immediately at that point. But you can read through all of that. And David was celebrating this like crazy going into Jerusalem. This was a great thing, bringing the ark in, being able to have the tent. This was really a good celebration. And so he is singing and he is dancing. And his wife, Michal, really didn't like what she saw and basically accused him of not being a leader and really blasted him quite a bit. And David responds by saying, you know what? God chose me, and I was celebrating the honor of being chosen by God, celebrating the ark coming in here, and I'm going to continue to sing and dance because of this choice. And she is actually penalized for coming out against this, for being upset about it, by not being able to have any children throughout her life as well. And so,
before all this happens, David has married a number of other women and has a number of other children, but Michal is his first wife, and she is never able to have children. And there are some other episodes throughout the book where she is kind of, you know, she sort of betrays him in a number of ways.
So. And she was Saul's daughter as well.
Yes. So in chapter 7, well, before I get to that, it is a big deal that the Ark has come to Jerusalem, because that is a place where it would be for many, many years. Later on, of course, there would be a temple that would be built that would house the Ark of the Covenant. And up until this point, that Ark, of course, carried the tablets of the Ten Commandments. And anywhere that they had that Ark, they knew God was with them. It was like the Ark was like the throne of God, like God's presence among them. And it wasn't something that anyone could just come and touch. It was a very holy item. And, you know, God was to be feared. God was, you know, a jealous God, sometimes a vengeful God. And those who approached God's presence without permission could be zapped. And that's kind of what this is about, just showing how very special and holy the Ark of the Covenant is. And it's something that you don't mess with. But now it would be living in Jerusalem, which would be God's holy city, and eventually there would be a temple built around it, which is kind of what the next chapter is about. Chapter 7, David is known to be a very faithful, loyal follower of God. He consults God before he goes to battle. He asks what God would like him to do, and David looks at his life, at all of his wives and his children and the beautiful palace that he lives in. And he says, oh, what am I thinking? Why didn't we build God a house before we built me a house? And so he talks to Nathan. I think this is the beginning of when we first meet Nathan. Nathan is kind of like the Samuel to David. He's the prophet and advisor that God has chosen to help David through being a king. And so David goes to Nathan and says, well, look at this. I'm living in a house of cedar, but the ark of God, God's presence, lives in a tent. So we got to do something about this. And Nathan says, go ahead, God's with you. Well, Nathan didn't so much know exactly what God wanted.
Sometimes you must listen before you speak.
Because then God spoke to Nathan and says, you don't know what you're talking about. You tell David, who are you to build me a house? You know, I've lived in a tent for all these years, and that's good enough. You're not the one who's going to build me a house. Someone will build me a house, but it's not going to be you. So don't be thinking that you're going to be building me a temple, because that's not in the plans. But in addition, God also blesses David and his reign, and says that his kingdom will be forever, not just, you know, for 40 years, which is what it ended up being, but David's reign would be forever, that it would last forever, that his name would be well known and well loved because he was such a faithful king. And you think to Jesus' time, and it's very true that Jesus was known as the son of David. He was from David's city, Bethlehem. And so David's name and his reign did go on forever in a number of ways, even when David was gone and even when the kingdom was no more, the earthly kingdom.
If you then move on into 2 Samuel 8, you can go through and there's a list of the number of victories that David had in his war. And also you can go down and see a list of all of the officials who were involved. This is real scintillating reading, but it is there if you want to go through it, read through all of that we have. Then David goes out and he finds that there is a relative of Saul who is still alive. And David still wants, in some ways, to make amends with Saul's family. So he goes and finds him, and I'm going to slaughter this name. If you can say it any better than I can, you're more than welcome to give it a shot.
Give it a try first.
Mephibosheth.
I would maybe say Mephibosheth.
Mephibosheth.
Yeah, and he was actually Jonathan's son. He was looking to continue to show, you know, mercy on his good friends Jonathan's family. And they find Mephibosheth.
And so David then brought in a servant named Ziba and basically said, I want you to go and serve Mephibosheth. I want you to be his servant. I want him to have all of his property back. I want him to be treated like royalty and sit at my table every night for meals. I want him to be treated this way because it's a sign of respect for Jonathan for that line of the anointed as well. And so he came and was welcomed into David's family in many ways. And so it was a wonderful sign. Little foreshadowing, it didn't pay off in the end, but it was very generous on that. Then as we move on, we get into one of the more famous stories about David, and that is David and Bathsheba. So did you want to start telling this one?
Sure. So David, of course, is the king and very successful in battle and very well-loved. I mean, he's brought together people who wouldn't even speak to each other before. And so David could do no wrong, very faithful to God. But in chapter 11, we see that David indeed could do wrong.
Here's the human nature.
Yeah, David's wandering around on the roof of his palace and doing a little bit of peeping Tom-ish stuff. He sees
his version of sightseeing.
Right. He looks out and he sees a woman bathing. And, of course, she's very beautiful, and he wonders who she is, and they tell him her name. Her name is Bathsheba. And, by the way, she's married to Uriah the Hittite. And Uriah the Hittite was one of his soldiers in his army, and so he should say, oh, excellent. I'm glad she's being provided for by a good man.
Which is not what he did.
That is not what he did. So David basically sent for her, and he desired her, and so he sent his servants to go get her, and as a loyal subject, there was really nothing that she could do to say no. And she's brought to David, and of course he slept with her, and soon after they find out that she's pregnant. Her husband Uriah has been on the battle lines this entire time, so there really is no way that she could have gotten pregnant legitimately. And so David tries to figure out what to do. And so he launches a cover-up sort of operation. And so he calls for Uriah to be brought home to maybe get some R&R and spend some time with his wife and hopefully give an excuse and say, see, he got her pregnant. But Uriah, being such a great soldier, says, oh, no, I could never think of doing this. I need to be fighting on the lines as I have committed to do, and I'm focused on that. I cannot go home until our mission is complete. And David says, crap. What am I going to do? You know, people are going to know she is going to be stoned for committing adultery, and I am the reason for this. And so to cover his own tracks and probably to protect her as well, David does a terrible thing, and he sends orders to have Uriah put on the front lines where he will surely be killed, and that's exactly what happened. And so Uriah would never find out that Bathsheba was pregnant with the king's child.
After that, Nathan comes to visit David and basically starts to tell a story to David about a man who had one little lamb, this poor man who had one little lamb that he had raised his entire life. And this lamb even would eat from his plate and drink from his cup and sleep on his lap, and was a very cherished little lamb as like one of his children. And one day, this is a poor man who had this, but he lived next to this rich man who had so much he had to offer, so many sheep and cattle and everything else. Well, one day a man came to visit the rich man, and the rich man didn't want to kill any of his sheep or slaughter any of his cattle. And so he went and he took this little lamb for the poor man and had it slaughtered so that he could treat this visitor to something and to this meal. And David was so upset in hearing this story that he said to Nathan, you tell me who this was, and I will make sure that this rich man, that he is taken care of, that he will be punished, and that the poor man will be treated well. And Nathan then turns and says, David, you're the rich man. You have so much. You had so many wives. You have so many children. You have so much, and yet you saw one other. You saw Bathsheba, and you just had to have her. And in order to do that, you let somebody die. Actually, you encouraged somebody to die. How could you do such a horrible thing? And then a message comes as well that says, because of what you've done, this child who is yours and going to be born of Bathsheba, this child is going to die as well. And that is what happened, that the son died because of what had happened.
But what's unique about this situation is that David sees his fault and he repents. You know, just as Nathan says, you are the man, David says, you're right. I have done wrong. By this point, he already has married Bathsheba. The child already has been born. Nathan comes to him and shows him his sin, and David admits it, and he repents, and he realizes how wrong he was in the actions that he did. It wasn't wrong of him to marry another woman. It was wrong of him to marry a woman that already had a husband, or to, you know,
have a husband killed.
Yeah, and commit adultery with her and then have him killed so he could have her.
What came out of this afterwards is then David and Bathsheba comfort each other at the loss of their son, and in the process, she becomes pregnant again, and then will be born Solomon. And Solomon will be a king later on as well.
So David was a good king. He made a lot of mistakes, but God forgave him. But of course, there are consequences for mistakes, as there are in life. One of the consequences for David's success and his focus on military stuff and his having many wives and many children is that his children were a little messed up.
Just a wee bit.
It seems that his children were probably not disciplined as they should have been, or didn't get the attention that they needed to get, because there are a number of episodes throughout the rest of 2 Samuel about the mistakes that his children made. Chapter 13, just very quickly, he has a couple of sons. One of them is named Amnon, and he has a daughter named Tamar. And Amnon has fallen in love with his half-sister, and he rapes her. And Absalom is another son of David's. And Absalom finds out that his brother Amnon has raped their sister, and so he kills him. And he's avenging the rape of his sister, but it wasn't right for him to do that either. In fact, it was really David's job to discipline and punish Amnon, but David apparently was too busy and didn't do anything about it, and so Absalom did something. Absalom is someone who appears quite a lot throughout the rest of 2 Samuel, and he is not a great character. He is very selfish, very
short-tempered.
Vain. Yeah, and very much in it for himself. He, you know, from this episode, it seems that he's trying to look out for his sister, but the rest of 2 Samuel shows that really he was in this for himself. He wanted to be king. And a lot of the rest of 2 Samuel is about Absalom's attempt to take over the kingdom while David was still alive.
Over and over again, you will see Absalom coming back up, and you will see ways that he tries to take over. There's even a time when he rebels against David and almost gets David to leave Jerusalem.
He does get David to leave Jerusalem.
And then David has to return and everything that goes with it as well.
Absalom declares himself as king over Hebron, which David had been king over before, and everybody's kind of like, oh, okay. And when they hear that, messengers come to David, and David declares that they have to flee, and so all of the officials run away from Jerusalem because they don't want to all be killed and destroyed. And so this, you know, it's like a civil war again, that Absalom takes over part of the kingdom, and he's battling his father's armies, and you know that's not going to end well. You know, a civil war within the same family, and, you know, I'm sure Absalom would have been an interesting case study for psychiatrists or something. Daddy wasn't there for me, so I'm going to take over his kingdom. Anyway, it does not end well for Absalom. Skipping ahead to chapter 18, Absalom and his army are defeated, and Absalom apparently was as good-looking, if not more good-looking, than his father, and was well-known for his beautiful hair, and he's riding a mule.
Like my beautiful hair?
Yes, just like your beautiful hair.
Thank you. For those who don't know, I'm fairly bald.
Yeah. So Absalom is riding a mule to meet David's army, and as he's riding the mule, his hair gets stuck in the thick branches of a great oak tree, and he's left hanging there from the tree, unable to free himself, which kind of is an amusing image, but it wasn't.
Benefit of being bald.
Yeah, and so Joab, who had killed Abner a number of chapters back, found Absalom hanging there, and he and his men end up killing Absalom. So David hears of Absalom's death. David, you know, of course it was his son. He wasn't a great son, and in fact was trying to take over everything that was David's. But, of course, he was still David's son, and David grieved greatly the death of his son Absalom.
I think we're going to start to wrap it up there for this week. Next week, we're going to follow through with the rest of David and move into Solomon as well and talk some about that. And so that's where we'll be going through next week. If you have any questions, please, we invite you to send us an email. We will love to hear from you and respond as we can. Also, we're going to do a little precursor. One of the things about a year ago Pastor Jennifer and I did was a weekend of whys and wonderings. It was when we had asked for questions from the congregation, and we answered those as well. We're going to be doing another one of those coming up pretty soon. We haven't set the date yet, but just so you know, once again, we were going to do a weekend of whys and wonderings where we're going to be taking some of your questions, and in our Sunday service, we will be responding to those as well. So some people view this as stump the pastor. We don't. We view this more as a way to get as much out as we can with some of the questions that you have. Anything you would like to add at this point?
Nope, I'm good.
All right. Thank you once again for joining us, and we hope that you have a blessed day.